Okay, testing, testing, 1, 2, 1, 2. Okay, testing, testing, 1, 2. Right. Dr. Daniel Jackson, SG-1 mission report. Oh, wait. Before I left. No, no, it's right here. Okay. Well, amazing. Okay, Dr. Daniel Jackson, mission report, 0586, that's P2K-797. I guess, where to begin? Logically, at the beginning, that's where most stories start, although the beginning of this story is probably somewhere near the middle. I think, it's actually kind of hard to tell, and mostly depends on your perspective, but that's, okay, let's just go with my perspective. Let's start at the beginning of my story, after all. There's no one else to tell it.
Dr. Jackson?
The first thing I remember is Major Hunter's face. Brow drawn low over anxious eyes, his tight expression was a picture of controlled alarm.
Dr. Jackson, wake up. Something's happened, sir. You need to wake up.
Like most people who've done a tour or two at the SGC, Hunter can honestly claim to have been, well, to have seen everything. Canny, phlegmatic, it takes a lot to spook him. But that day he was thoroughly spooked.
I swear to God, sir, I don't know what the hell's going on. How did we get here?
I was laying on the floor of my lab, staring up at an indistinct ceiling. I blinked and tried to sit up, ignoring the headache jackhammering behind my eyes. Hunter crouched next to me, shoving something into my hands. It turned out to be, well, my glasses.
Last thing I remember, we were heading for 797.
We'd been standing on the ramp a couple of inches from the puddle. Sam and Teal had already gone through with the rest of SG-12, but Jack was hanging back trying to get a rise out of Hunter. Something about a hockey game, I think. Hunter said, well, he said something majors probably shouldn't say to colonels, but Jack just smiled, tugged on his cap, and walked into the event horizon while I woke up back in my lab.
Can't raise anyone, sir. I think the whole base is locked down. Or worse.
Worse didn't sound good, not when Hunter said it in that military deadpan of his. It took some effort to get up, and if I looked anything like Hunter, it's no surprise. I immediately went for the phone, but halfway across the lab, I stopped dead. What's that?
You're asking the wrong soldier, sir. It's your lab. Don't you recognize it?
No, I don't recognize it at all. Sitting in the middle of my workbench was a golden box, clearly of gold origin. It was beautiful, inlaid with ivory and exquisitely engraved. It glowed with a lustrous sheen that seemed almost luminous as it hummed softly to itself. Clearly it was an object of power, but I had no idea where it had come from or what it was doing in my lab. I couldn't get an answer from anyone, not even the control room. Hunter and I had no choice. There was only one way to find out what was going on.
Sir? You might need this.
Years ago, I'd have felt uncomfortable with a Beretta in my hands, but not now. Let's go. Sticking close to the walls, we made our way toward the control room. Hunter took the lead, moving with the confidence of a man born into the military. When we reached the first turn in the corridor, he stopped and gestured for me to wait as he peered around the corner. In the eerie silence, I could hear nothing but his breathing, fast and shallow, as he darted. Gun first, out of sight. There was a breathless wait. Then...
Dr. Jackson, you'd better come see this.
My heart stopped when I rounded the corner. Scattered along the length of the corridor, in twos and threes, were people. SGC personnel, friends and colleagues, lying as though they'd simply fallen where they stood.
What on God's green earth?
Are they dead? I didn't wait for Hunter's reply before I went to the side of the closest victim, Lieutenant Harper. Her face was waxy, lips tinted blue, but when I put my fingers to her throat, I felt a thready pulse. A frail breath brushed my face. Thank God she's alive, I said, standing up. Looks like whatever knocked us out knocked out the whole base. I tucked the bread into my belt, suddenly less fearful. Whatever had happened was a puzzle, but it wasn't a lethal puzzle so far. I cast Hunter a scant smile. Come on, let's get to the control room.
Damn it. They're all out too.
Walter Harriman was sprawled across his console and a couple of young airmen lay on the floor nearby. More importantly, though, General Hammond was slumped before the mic as if he'd been about to give orders before he was struck down. I crossed the room quickly and tried to rouse him. Perhaps enough time had passed, or perhaps he's just too mulish to give in. But as I shook his shoulder, the general began to stir. What the devil? He muttered, grimacing as he sat up. All around us, the rest of the staff began to stir, but when the general saw me, his eyes widened. Dr. Jackson, why aren't you on P2K-797? Pausing as I helped Walter to sit up, I said, good question, sir. Last thing I remember...
Sirs?
I looked up and saw Hunter transfixed, staring down into the gate room. My breath caught. What I was seeing was impossible. The Stargate appeared to be open, but instead of the event horizon's usual shimmer, all I could see was a reflection of our own gate room. At least, that's what I thought. Slowly, I moved to the window.
It's never done that before, right, sir?
No. No, it hasn't. But this was no reflection. This was something else entirely, because as we watched, I saw myself through the Stargate, as if through the looking glass. I watched myself walk up the ramp and reach out a hesitant hand to touch the surface of the event horizon.
That's not possible.
Well, apparently it is. For a moment longer, I watched my alternate self, and then I ran for the stairs, Hunter on my heels. Behind us, General Hammond's voice boomed through the base. SG-1 to the gate room, SG-1 to the gate room. Up close, it was incredible. The Stargate had become a giant window into another reality. That was the only explanation, after all, and my first instinct was to make contact. But I'd only made it halfway up the ramp before the rest of the team arrived. Whoa! Hold it right there, Dr. Livingston. Jack, as usual, was the voice of caution. What's going on? I tried not to roll my eyes. That's what I was about to find out, I said, gesturing pointedly at the other version of myself who still stood studying the gate. Jack cast him a narrow-eyed look, but it was Sam who said, actually, Daniel, I don't think he can see us. I moved closer to the gate. My alternate self was dressed exactly as I was, and at the bottom of his ramp I could see the rest of his team. I glanced over my shoulder at Jack, Sam, and Teal'c. They were identical in every way. I was about to comment on it when the alternate Daniel spoke.
Can we disconnect manually?
His voice, so close, made me jump. Behind me, I heard Sam mutter, impossible. Cautiously, I drew near and said, hello? There was no response. Instead, he turned and shouted over his shoulder,
well, that's not working.
I looked up at our control room. Can we shut it down at this end? I called. Hammond spoke briefly to Harriman and then grabbed the mic.
Well, we've already tried it. He shook his head, baffled. According to the log, the gate's been open for over 8 hours. Whatever this is, it's effectively disabling our use of the Stargate.
We all knew what that meant. Off-world team stranded and the potential for anything to come through the gate. From the bottom of the ramp, Jack said, briefing room, now. Hunter, that includes you.
Last thing I remember, sir, you and I were standing on the ramp, discussing the Stanley Cup.
Jack had his feet up on the table, fingers steepled. Last thing I remember, you'd called me something unrepeatable in...
General Hammond, sir.
As usual, the general waved everyone back to their seats. He fixed each of us with a steady look.
Let's start with the good news, he said. Dr. Frazier reports no ill effects from whatever it was that knocked us out, aside from the 8-hour gap in all our memories.
And the bad news, sir?
The general's expression was grave.
We've been unable to make contact with anyone outside the base. All entrances and exits are locked down and inoperable. For all intents and purposes, we're cut off.
He paused, letting the news sink in. Then he said,
now, does anyone have an explanation for whatever the hell is going on?
There was a long silence.
Captain Carter,
Sam hesitated for a moment before launching into a series of speculations about the vagaries of multiverse theory. A gate malfunction could, she suggested, explain the connection with this other reality, but she had no explanation for the base lockdown or the missing 8 hours. My mind began to drift, going over the events since I'd woken up in my lab. Other than the missing 8 hours, and a headache of monumental proportions, everything was the same as I remembered. Everything except, there's an unidentified alien artifact in my lab. 5 pairs of eyes turned to stare at me. Jack cocked his head as if to say, "And your point is?" Ignoring his look, I continued, "I don't know where it came from. It was just there when I woke up. It's clearly Goa'uld in origin, a box of Middle Kingdom design." Jack raised an eyebrow. "A box?"
It glows, sir. Kind of luminous.
I cut Hunter a look. It seemed to be emitting some kind of energy, I agreed. There wasn't time to examine it earlier. General Hammond nodded slowly, eyes darting between Jack and Sam. "Captain Carter," he said, "you and Major Hunter accompany Dr. Jackson to his lab and see what you can make of this luminous box. Don't take any risks. Jack, till we can close the iris, I need you to secure the gate room. Who knows what or who might come through the gate."
"What do you think it is, Captain?"
Sam was in her element, eyes bright as she circled the strange device. "I have no idea, sir," she beamed, "but whatever it is, it's beautiful. The elegance of the design is breathtaking, don't you think?" Hunter didn't seem overly impressed, but I'd had the same reaction as Sam. Aside from its aesthetic appeal, the entire box was covered in intriguingly obscure inscriptions, at which I was itching to take a closer look. But first things first, I glanced at Hunter. "You have absolutely no memory of the mission."
"No, sir. Do you?"
I shook my head, but the device had to have come from somewhere. And just because we couldn't remember the mission, it didn't mean it hadn't taken place. Something had happened during those missing hours. Ah, I was suddenly struck by an idea and, jumping to my feet, began rummaging through the cluttered drawers of my desk.
"Sir?"
"It's here somewhere. I always put it... Triumphantly, I pulled out my digicam. If we'd been on the mission, I'd have recorded at least some of it. Sam stopped working, watching as I hit play.
"Delusion, sir. If you think the Blackhawks can stand a chance this season, then there's no way."
"Hey, that's me. What the hell? Let me see that."
I passed the camera over. It showed Hunter and Jack walking ahead of me on a dusty, treeless world. Beyond them, I could just make out a small settlement with all the trappings of a nomadic encampment. "So that's P2K-797, I said quietly. "Now let's see what happened there." The encampment was rough. A few tents sewn from animal hides clustered around a large fire pit, blackened and cold in the morning light. Children watched us with dark, wary eyes. Women whispered behind their hands in a thick dialect I could barely make out. They were poor, ragged, and too thin. And although they weren't hostile, they were afraid. These were a people familiar with the Goa'uld and all the deprivations inflicted upon a slave population. On the small screen of the camera, I could see Jack and Teal'c exchange a wary look, my voice sounding flat and distant through the camera's speakers.
"Jack? Over here. I think someone's... Hi there. Hi. My name's Daniel Jackson. This is Colonel O'Neill, Captain Carter, and Teal'c. We're peaceful travelers."
The camera swung about to reveal a small group of men approaching. Young, most of them. They held back as one man stepped forward and bowed. Then he gestured toward one of the tents.
"I think he wants us to go inside,"
I said. Jack was partially on screen now, frowning from beneath his cap.
"And do we want to go inside?"
"My guys report the perimeter secure, sir. No sign of the gold or anyone else."
Jack nodded, squinting in the distance.
"Just don't make me eat the food,"
he muttered as he headed into the tent. The image cut out for a moment, then came back inside the tent. It was dark and difficult to make out, but it was obviously a feast. Some time had passed because we were all sitting down and a man in elaborate dress was talking in the same obscure dialect I'd heard before. The feast was in our honor, and I put down the camera and ran. All eyes were on the Stargate. Through it, a terrible drama was being played out. We could do nothing but watch as a battalion of Jaffa invaded the mirror world. It was like staring through the back of a looking glass. The Jaffa appearing out of nowhere to stream down the ramp ahead of us. The other Daniel, Jack, and Teal'c were laying down desperate cover fire, Hunter and SG-12 at their backs. But they'd already been pushed to the blast doors and were obviously in full retreat. Sam was in the control room working frantically to close either the gate or the iris.
Cut the power! Just cut the power!
In the other gate room, the lights went out, plunging into smoky darkness. It went quiet. All we could see was the occasional glint of a weapon in that breathless wait. The event horizon flickered, sputtered, and then stabilized.
Damn it!
Lit only by the incandescent blue of the wormhole and the flashes of ZAT, staff weapons, and other laser sights, the invasion continued. Jack yelled, "Fall back! Fall back!" But then Teal'c grabbed his arm and pointed at the control room above them. It was swarming with Jaffa. Sam and Hammond were gone.
They've lost it. They've lost the gate room.
I saw Jack yelling into his radio, and through the noise of battle, General Hammond was shouting orders over the PA. "All units, regroup," he barked. "To the secondary command bunker." And then, with a final burst of gunfire, Jack, Teal'c, and the other Daniel Jackson abandoned their gate room to the Jaffa. Shouldn't we... Isn't there something, anything we can do? I mean, should we at least try to help them? I couldn't believe we were just standing there watching the annihilation of the SGC. Our worst nightmare was being played out in widescreen, and we weren't doing anything about it.
Real question, sir, is how long before those Jaffa hit our gate room?
No one had an answer to that. And then things got worse. While the rest of us had been transfixed by the horror playing out through the Stargate, Sam had been doing more calculations. The results weren't good. In fact, they were dire. "Actually," Sam said, turning away from the console, "the Jaffa might be the least of their problems. And ours."
"I don't know, Captain. Hard to see how it could get much worse than a gold invasion."
Sam sighed, impatient. "Look," she said, "according to the data I'm receiving, the wormhole is becoming unstable. Normally, a collapsing wormhole would trigger the gate to shut down, allowing the energy to dissipate harmlessly into space. But with the gates in two realities locked together, the released energy will be forced back through both stargates. The resulting whiplash explosion would be catastrophic."
"Catastrophic, as in the SGC goes kaboom?"
Sam shook her head. "No, sir," she said. "Catastrophic, as in the whole planet in both realities goes kaboom." According to Sam, we had about 4 hours before the wormhole's instability became critical, so we headed back to my lab. I knew the gold box had to be the key, so while Sam poked about inside it, I concentrated on reviewing my tapes of the mission. I returned to the feast. The man, a shaman, going by a ceremonial headdress, was talking. I could make out a few words. Friendship, faith, trust. Behind him, painted on the inside walls of the tent, I could see gold inscriptions, but the image was too dark to make them out. Just then, the shaman turned around and beckoned to two women. They stepped forward, carrying something heavy and shrouded in red and gold silk. It was placed reverently on the ground before us, and the shaman gestured for me to remove the cloth. I reached out and tugged back the silk, revealing the box that now sat in my lap. After an astonished pause, I said,
"This is a very generous gift."
Our host simply bowed his head and smiled.
"This?"
I was touching the engravings.
"This is Sekhmet, the Eye of Ra, but this, the cartouche and the lid, this address I've never seen before."
Despite the camera's small screen, I could see Jack eyeing the gift dubiously.
"You know what they say about Greeks sparing gifts, Daniel."
My reply was interrupted by Teal'c.
"Sekhmet was reputed to possess a secret cache of weapons, O'Neill. Its location known only to herself and Ra. This symbol here..."
He touched the box lightly.
"Means armory. It is possible that this address may lead us to her hidden reserve of weapons."
Jack's ears pricked up, just as Sam looked up from studying the box.
"Sir? Oh boy. Sir, not only does this device appear to be made of a Nakoda alloy, but it's, and this is quite astonishing, it's emitting positronium particles."
Jack looked dour, blinked once, and said,
"And I should be excited about that because..."
Sam glanced at the shaman, smiled, then indicated with a nod for us to follow her. She stopped a little distance away and in a low voice said,
"Sir, this is an incredibly important discovery. Until now, positronium has only been a theoretical substance, but its potential uses are incredible.
With a sigh, Jack said,
"And by incredible, you mean something that will bring untold joy to the men in white coats, or something we can actually use?"
With a frown, Sam snatched the cap from her head and stuffed it into a pocket. Layman's language was not her forte.
"Okay, sir, to put it as simply as I can, multi-positronium interactions have the potential to create coherent gamma radiation that could be used to develop fusion power. Safe atomic energy. No more dependence on fossil fuels. But..."
Her voice dropped lower.
"But, sir, the most significant technology for us would be the potential for directed energy weapons. We're talking gamma ray lasers."
Jack scratched the back of his neck.
"Ray guns, Carter?"
Sam nodded.
"Our own equivalent of the staff weapon, or ZAT, sir. Much more powerful than anything we have right now. But think about it. Personal arms, interplanetary defenses. Colonel, I can't overstate the importance of this discovery. We've never managed to create positronium in a lab. The potential of this, sir, it's possibly the most significant find since Daniel first opened the Stargate."
"Don't know about Greeks, sir, but I say don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Besides, we wouldn't want to upset the locals."
"He's got a point, Jack. Refusing a gift of this generosity could be considered an insult."
Jack looked from me to the box and back again.
"And none of you think it's a little odd that they're giving us this incredibly valuable gift? Kind of pushy for a first date, don't you think?"
There was a pause. Sam grimaced and glanced at me as if to say, "Persuade him."
I guess,"
I said quietly.
It depends on what value this has to them. This is a pre-industrial society, Jack. What use do they have for nuclear technology we haven't even mastered? They want the food and medicines we can offer. They want our help against the Goa'uld, and this is probably all they have to offer in exchange."
I gestured toward the shaman who was watching us with expectant eyes.
"Let them keep their pride, Jack."
He looked at me for a long moment, considering the point, and then, with a nod, gave his approval. Almost at once, the camera canted sideways and went to black. There was nothing more recorded. With a sigh, I put the camera down and paced to the other end of the lab, watching Sam as she tinkered with the box. It had been offered to us freely, it seemed. Too freely, perhaps, with the benefit of hindsight. If only I could have gotten a better look at the gold inscriptions on the inside of the tent, perhaps I could have figured out what... I was interrupted by a gasp from Sam. She jumped back from the box, which was opening like a flower, revealing an iridescent globe that fizzed with latent power. Sam? What's that? Warily, I drew a little closer. The air crackled, but Sam's eyes were wide with delight. "It's the positronium generator, Daniel. Look how small it is. It's so incredibly beautiful." It was beautiful. Everything about it was exquisite. I ran my fingers over the gold inscription. "A gift of the gods," it read. Curious, really. The gold have never been noted for their generosity. "Could it be a device enabling interdimensional travel?" I asked. "Something given to a loyal First Prime, perhaps, or to a junior Goa'uld?" Sam wasn't convinced. "It's too dangerous," she said. "Far too unstable to be used reliably. Maybe it's a prototype or a failed technology, something they couldn't get to work. And yet it was a gift of the gods. What kind of a gift would the Goa'uld create for their subjects? An object of beauty and raw power, engraved with magnificent carvings and tantalizing hints at a lost treasure. It was irresistible, a veritable candy box. Anyone would want it, anyone who found it would take it home. No one would suspect." I looked at Sam in shock. "Oh my God, it's a weapon." Thank you all for coming so fast. General Hammond, if I may, with the General's approval, I began to brief everyone on our theory. From what we can gather, the intention of the device, the box, is to exploit the nature of wormhole physics to create an interdimensional link. In effect, it's locking open the stargates in these two realities.
A foot in the door, huh? But why? Just to facilitate the invasion?
No, we don't think so. The technology is too dangerous for that, too unpredictable. Its intention is much more straightforward. The whiplash explosion Sam's predicting, that's not the device malfunctioning. That's its purpose.
You're saying it's a bomb?
Think about it. The device is wrapped up like a Christmas present. It has an aqueda, intriguing coordinates, a positronium generator. It's got something for everyone. A gift of the gods. Only when you bring it back through your stargate, it jams the gate open until the wormhole destabilizes. And because your gate is being wedged open by its link to the alternate reality, the wormhole discharges through the gate and destroys your planet. All the Goa'uld have to do is sit and watch.
So why are they sending Jaffa through to beat the crap out of the other guys? I'm sorry, Doctor, that doesn't make any sense.
It was Teal'c'u answered, more grimly than usual. The Goa'uld care nothing for the lives of their Jaffa. It is likely that they have been deployed to ensure that the Stargate is not deactivated before the device has fulfilled its purpose. Which means, I said, that there is a way to stop this.
Hey, look! I think the other guys are trying to do just that.
He was looking down at the Stargate, through the Stargate. In the alternate gate room, a firefight had broken out. I glanced at General Hammond, and he nodded. As one, we dashed for the gate room. It was chaos. SG-1 were laying down covering fire while the other me, and Hunter made a run for the gate. The firefight was intense, choking smoke lit by red darts of laser sights and the lightning flash of Zat fire, but they made it. As Hunter covered him, Bear Daniel pulled out cables and a laptop from the bag he'd been carrying. He was working furiously. Sam, what is he doing? I took a step closer to the gate, trying to get a better look. Looks like he's attempting to close the gate manually, Sam guessed. It's a good bet the Goa'uld have encrypted the access protocols. He's probably trying to break the code. Question is, why is it you and not me? Peering through the distortion of the event horizon, I could just make out the laptop screen. How's your colloquial heretic? I asked Sam. Whatever he's doing it in Goa'uld. Hunter was struggling to hold off the Jaffa. SG-1's foothold in the gate room was evaporating.
Dr. Jackson!
I know. Just give me a minute to crack the password.
You don't have a minute!
The place was crawling with Jaffa. They were in the control room, pressing in through one set of blast doors. Daniel crouched near the gate, intent on the laptop. Hunter firing into the ranks of Jaffa, pushing into the gate room. Neither of them saw the man step through the Stargate behind them. He had the ruthless demeanor of a first prime, angry and sneering. I felt a dreadful jolt of shock. I knew that face. It was the shaman from P2K-797, the man who had given us the gift. His arrogant gaze swept the room before it came to rest on Hunter and Daniel. Almost lazily, he raised his zap. Someone yelled a warning. Hunter turned around. Too late.
Dr. Jackson!
Daniel went sprawling and twitching to the floor, the laptop arcing and spitting fire as the zap blast hit.
Man down! Dr. Jackson!
Hunter was badly hurt, his left shoulder charred by the staff blast, but he wasn't down. Desperately, he stumbled toward Daniel, climbing over the gate ramp to where he lay sprawled on the floor. But he didn't have a chance.
No!
Daniel's body, my body, convulsed when the second Zat hit, and then he lay still. In that moment, all I could hear was the uneven beat of my heart, loud in the silence of our gate room. Through the smoke and the distortion of the wormhole, I'd just witnessed my own death. I'd thought about it before, of course. We all have, every time we step through the gate, but seeing it happen before my eyes. Seeing the numb slackness of my face, the awkward angle of my limbs as if reflected in some twisted mirror. It was indescribable. And it wasn't over. Heedless of the life he'd just taken, the first prime swaggered down the ramp and into the fray. Jack, Sam, and Teal'c were ashen-faced by the blasters, fighting desperately to cover Hunter's exit.
Pull back!
Jack yelled.
Hunter, pull back!
But Hunter wasn't leaving. He was clambering over the ramp. His shoulder was a bloody mess, his left arm useless. But even so, he was trying to lift the dead weight of Daniel's body. And suddenly Jack's words came back to me. No one gets left behind. Maybe I'd thought it military bravado once, but not now. A hard knot of pride tightened my throat as I watched Major Hunter struggle to bring my body home. He made it as far as the ramp before he collapsed. Go, I whispered into the Stargate, knowing he couldn't hear me. Please, Just go. The body, my body, was half sprawled across the gate. Hunter crouching at its side. He was taking fire in all directions, and from the door, Jack was still yelling,
"Pull back! Pull back!"
Hunter bent his head.
"I'm sorry, Dr. Jackson."
He lingered a moment just long enough to yank the dog tags from my neck before he staggered towards safety. Behind him, the Stargate shimmered and another troop of Jaffa appeared. Eyes bright with disdain, their leader surveyed the room in silence before his gaze fell upon the body that blocked their way. Daniel Jackson's body. The Jaffa's chin lifted, irritated by the mess, and he gestured to one of his men. Heavy boots clanged on the gate ramp as he lifted his zat and fired the third and final shot. The body disappeared, dispensed of like so much garbage. It was chilling. Terrifying to see my existence snuffed out so easily. A shocked silence filled our gate room. I glanced over at Jack. His expression was dark and controlled, but I saw anger there, and a fear I know he'd never admit. "Well," he said sharply, "there's no way in hell that happens here." Sam offered a faint smile, a grim attempt at reassurance, while Teal'c simply put a hand on my shoulder. It said all that needed to be said.
"There, but for the grace of God."
Amen to that. None of us said much after that. I returned to my lab, eager to study the gold weapon more closely. I knew what my friends would be going through in the other reality. Not only the sadness of losing a comrade, but a desperate fear of the gold breaking out of the SGC. It was our worst nightmare being played out before our eyes, and not a damn thing we could do about it. To just watch and do nothing. Anger curled tight in the pit of my stomach, and I used it to help me focus, to sharpen my mind. There had to be a way to end this.
"Dr. Jackson."
Hunter didn't quite meet my eyes as he stood in the doorway. So tense, he was practically at attention.
"Sir, I just wanted to apologize."
Why?
"For letting you down, sir. On the other side, I didn't have your back, sir, and that was my job."
For a moment, I just stared at him. "What is it with these military types?" "That wasn't you," I said at last. "And anyway, that Hunter didn't let anyone down either. There's no way he could have known."
"You should have covered the gate. It was a basic error, sir. I can't believe I made it."
"Okay. First, it wasn't you. Second, there were Jaffa everywhere. The lights were out and it was chaos. He did the best he could."
"No, he didn't. I've been doing this job 10 years, Dr. Jackson. I didn't even think I was capable of that kind of greenhorn error."
"Some people might call it hubris, Major. We all make mistakes."
"I didn't have your back. I let that guy... He killed you, and I let it happen. What
you
if...
You didn't let it happen."
"What if I screw up again? Here, where it counts. What if..."
You know what I saw? I saw a soldier who refused to leave a man behind, even when it was already too late. I saw a soldier risk his life for the sake of some dog tags because that was all he could do. Hunter, listen to me. We weren't there. It wasn't us. And if the same thing happened here, maybe it would play out different. Maybe it wouldn't. But it doesn't matter because we do what we can and that's all we can do. There's no point in dissecting it afterwards. That guy didn't let anyone down and neither will you."
"You don't know that, sir."
"Yes, I do." Hunter still looked as though he were about to argue when Sam appeared behind him. She held some kind of device in her hand and waved it at me. "Positronium," she said. "I have an idea." Hunter came into the lab after her, and I wondered if he was going to take up permanent residence at my side on the off chance that a legion of Jaffa emerged unexpectedly from the closet. He settled himself near the door and watched as Sam plugged in the device she was carrying and aimed it at the box. Of course, the existence of positronium has never been proven, so it's only been studied theoretically. However, given that positronium itself has a mean lifetime of only about 125 picoseconds, I'm expecting this to... Yes. It's annihilated almost immediately. Daniel, could you hold this for me? She handed me the device, pulled up a stool, and logged into my computer. Just keep it aimed at the box, would you? I did as she asked, but I was distracted by Jack and Teal'c hovering in the doorway.
Come to join the party?
I asked, or is it a wake? Jack's eyes narrowed. No one died here, he said, and no one's about to. Hunter shifted awkwardly where he stood by the door, and Jack gave him a curt nod. Tough break back there, Major. Now let it go and move on.
Yes, sir.
Jack didn't say any more. He just ambled into the lab, restless fingers touching everything he passed. Tilk followed, bowed his head in silent greeting, and moved to stand on the opposite side of the door to Hunter. They looked like twin sentinels guarding us all from the nameless horrors beyond the Stargate. None of us talked about it, about what we just witnessed, but somehow we'd all gathered together, drawing strength from each other, and that was all we needed. Sam suddenly looked up from her work. Daniel, don't move. I guess I was tired, not concentrating, because I had let the positronium detector drift. It was no longer pointing at the Gogol device. It was pointing at Hunter.
Is there a problem, Captain?
Sam didn't answer, slipping out from behind the computer to take the device from my hand. It's impossible, she said quietly, turning the positronium detector on me, and Jack, Teal'c, my lab bench, the computer. I glanced over at Jack, who just shrugged. Sam? I asked. What's going on? She didn't answer, just thrust the device into my hands and darted back to the computer. After a long, silent moment, she looked up again, her face pale. Someone get General Hammond, she said. Now. Sam started talking the moment General Hammond walked into the briefing room. I know how to end this, sir, but you're not going to like it. She was right. In a nutshell, she discovered that it wasn't just the gold box that was emitting positronium. We all were. Everything around us was. The device hadn't linked us to an alternate reality. It had created one. Our universe, our reality, had split off from the other one the moment we stepped through the gate with the device.
Wait, Captain, are you saying we're not real?
Sam looked pained. Sir, she asked General Hammond, have you managed to contact anyone off base? He shook his head. You won't be able to, sir, because in this reality, nothing exists outside the SGC.
What? Captain, that's impossible.
I'm afraid it's not, sir. In the universe of infinite possibilities, this is one of them. Sam paused a moment as if considering how best to explain it. This reality was created and is sustained by the Goa'uld device for the sole purpose of engineering the whiplash explosion in the other reality. We're like a... Think of it as a reality bubble, sir.
So, no one else exists here? Our families? My kids? They're just gone?
In this reality? Sam said quietly. They never existed. It was a crushingly desolate truth. To be entirely alone in the universe, a single point of light in an unending night. Incomprehensible. We were all quiet for a long time until Jack said, not sure I want to live in a universe without the Simpsons. I smiled at Jack's method of jolting us back to the immediate problem. I glanced over at him and said, maybe we don't have to. Sam's grim expression confirmed the suspicion prickling at the back of my mind. The solution was devastatingly simple. Our reality was a creation of the gift we'd brought back through the Stargate. It was creating the reality in which we lived, but if we sent it back through the gate, I caught Sam's eye. There's a way to end this, isn't there? A way we can help them.
What way? Help them how?
Still holding Sam's gaze, I said, we return the gift. Send it back through the Stargate into their reality.
That easy. We just... Wait. Wait. If that box is creating this reality, then wouldn't we...
Yeah. Yeah, we would. If we send the device back through the gate, everything in this reality would cease to exist. I'll never forget that moment, standing there watching the shock turn slowly into resolution in the faces of my friends. The first and only question came from Jack. So, he said, how do we do it? Sam told us we'd simply have to push the box into the event horizon and let it go. Once it arrived in the other reality, our world would disappear. Their gate would disconnect and the Jaffa invasion would be halted. Hunter sighed, moving away from the door and fixing me with an odd look.
There's no way out of this, is there?
No. Nope, there's really not. Unless that box has an infinite power supply, this reality only has a finite existence. Days, maybe only hours. I glanced over at Sam, who nodded. It's probably only designed to last long enough to trigger the whiplash explosion, she said. Why would they need it to last any longer?
And what about us? What if we went through the gate, too? Would our lives depend on the power supply of the box?
Sam shook her head. Once we existed in the other universe, the box would become irrelevant. But entropic cascade failure makes it impossible for us to exist in two realities at once. Even if we went through, we wouldn't survive for more than a few hours.
Unless we didn't exist in the other universe anymore.
He glanced briefly at Jack and Teal'c, then at Sam. I knew I wasn't going to like what he had to say.
The Goa'uld device isn't the only thing we have, and they don't, sir.
I don't... What do you mean?
You, sir. We have you.
I looked at the others. Jack was tight-lipped, Sam pale but determined. Teal'c simply inclined his head in acknowledgement of the unspoken agreement. Guys, what...
You take the box back, Dr. Jackson. We can give them you.
No. No, absolutely not. I'm not jumping in the lifeboat while you guys... No.
They need you, sir.
Don't ask me to leave you all. No. I can't.
Never saw you as a coward, Dr. Jackson. Never thought you'd take the easy way out.
Oh, come on.
Keep fighting the Goa'uld, sir. Keep looking for your wife.
That was a low blow. I didn't answer. Couldn't find the words. All eyes were on me, but I couldn't believe they were asking me to abandon them. To run. At length, General Hammond spoke.
Think it over, Dr. Jackson. But Hunter's right. The loss of your expertise would be a heavy blow to the SGC in any reality.
And you'll remember us, sir. You'll remember what we've done. There'll be nobody else.
I closed my eyes, seeing vividly the moment of my death. Hunter had grabbed the dog tag as a simple proof of my existence. Of my death. A memory. And in the end, what are any of us but a collection of memories? Scratching the wall of an ancient tomb. For no one to remember the sacrifice these people were making. For an entire reality to blink out of existence, unknown and unremembered. Suddenly, it seemed an intolerable travesty. As an archaeologist, a historian, and preserver of all things past, how could I let that happen? How could I allow these people to surrender their very existence without someone to tell their story? Surely their sacrifice deserved remembrance. I looked at each of them in turn, my heart heavy, before I simply nodded.
You'll do it?
I'll do it. I'll do it in memoriam. Knowing what I was about to do was appalling. Every face I saw, friends and colleagues, made me queasy with irrational guilt. Whether we pitched the box through the gate or I carried it through myself, the outcome for everyone was the same. Our reality was a fabrication, a Goa'uld invention, and yet the thought that I would be the one to end the lives of all my friends, the only people I called family, if I let myself think about it in those terms, I could hardly breathe for the horror. It was too much. And so I concentrated on the details, the tiny insignificant details, like, for example, whether I'd be shot dead by the Jaffa the moment I stepped through the Stargate. I found Sam standing on the ramp, staring through the gate at the devastated gate room beyond. From the foot of the ramp, I called, "Out of the frying pan, huh?" She turned around with her usual optimistic smile. "I was just thinking. Maybe there's a way to give you a smoother landing. Shorten the odds a little. Even then, when her existence was measured in hours, she was thinking about my chances, my future. She gestured at the gate. If there was a way to disable the Jaffa, even temporarily... I smiled. Some kind of giant taser, perhaps? Sam's eyes went very round. Yes. Yes, that is exactly what we need. With a grin, she was off. Don't go anywhere until I get back. I sighed and turned to face the Stargate. The other side looked dark and bleak. Alien. I didn't want to go there. I didn't want to step into that ravaged, broken world beyond. Slowly, people began to arrive. Jack first, with a tight smile and little to say beyond cautioning me not to irritate the other O'Neill too much. Then he clapped me on the shoulder and left his hand there, long enough to say everything else. Then came Teal'c, carrying his staff weapon as if he might be able to fight off the end of the world. The end of the universe, I guess. Janet Fraser arrived. She gave me a brief hug and a wide smile, wishing me luck. Wishing me luck when they... After a while, Sam returned with Major Hunter and the rest of SG-12 struggling under a load of equipment. I raised a questioning eyebrow, and Hunter answered.
It's a laser gun, sir. We're going to kick some Jaffa ass before we say goodnight.
Sam looked incredibly pleased with herself as she oversaw the setting up of the equipment. I'm going to use a UV laser to fire a 5-joule pulse lasting 0.4 picoseconds, she said. The pulse will ionize the air and should, in theory, produce long filaments of glowing plasma. We can use those to deliver a 50,000-volt shock to all the Jaffa in the gate room. She grinned at me. A giant taser. At that moment, General Hammond strode in. He was wearing dress blues and a determined look. Everyone stilled. The moment had arrived. All set, Captain Carter? Sam nodded, her grin fading into resolve. And then the General's eyes came to rest on me. You carry all of us with you, Dr. Jackson. Don't let us down. I won't, I promised, as Jack picked up the gold device and handed it to me. Give him hell, Sundance. Behind me, Sam was ready to fire her weapon through the gate. On my mark, she called. 3, 2, 1, mark. It was difficult to see in the darkness beyond the gate, but there was no time to check. General Hammond's hand fell on my shoulder. Dr. Jackson, you have a go. I took a step onto the ramp and turned. They stood in the line together, Jack, Sam, and Teal'c. Sam raised her hand in farewell. Teal'c bowed his head. Jack just nodded. Behind them, Hammond faced the Stargate as he'd always faced the future, head high and eyes front. And for a moment, it was impossible to move. Impossible to place one foot in front of the other when I knew that the moment I entered the Stargate, my friends would cease to exist. Then Hunter stepped forward, offering me a crisp salute.
Don't let him forget us, sir. And tell Colonel O'Neill from me. The Black Hawks don't stand a chance this season.
Perhaps I smiled then. It's hard to remember. When I look back, all I can see are my feet on the grating of the ramp, the smoky blackness in the event horizon. I close my eyes and tighten my grip in the box. Behind me, General Hammond called out, Godspeed, Dr. Jackson. And then I stepped forward into the icy embrace of the Stargate, and it was all gone. Everyone was gone. The air was acrid with smoke, the dreadful tang of blood and gunpowder, the ozone stench of battle. Shimmering blue light from the Stargate cast the room in wild shadows, and all around lay Jaffa, some writhing as though in quicksand. And then in the far corner, someone moved. He climbed unsteadily to his feet, and... Pitch black, a crushing darkness beneath the looming weight of Cheyenne Mountain. I crouched low, disoriented, barely daring to breathe. At least one of the Jaffa had woken up. I knew it wouldn't be long before the rest recovered, and I was blind in the darkness, alone. Leaving the box by the gate, I began to creep down the ramp until my foot touched something. Something soft. Human. A hand grabbed my ankle, and I flung myself backward, kicking out when...
Secure the room! Secure the room!
Light flooded through the blast doors, silhouetting soldiers charging through.
Hunter to O'Neill! Requesting backup!
I scrambled back up the ramp, keeping low, keeping my hands in the air, and then I saw Jack and Teal crowding through the doorway, weapons raised. Sam followed, talking into a radio.
Jack!
I yelled through the chaos.
Jack! It's me!
He stopped dead just as the rattle of gunfire tailed off.
I think we got them all, sir.
Jack had his weapon leveled at me and was stalking through the fallen Jaffa as though they weren't there. Who are you? He said, stopping at the foot of the ramp and eyeing me through his gun sight. I raised my hands. It's me, I said carefully. Daniel Jackson.
What the hell?
Hunter was staring as though he'd seen a ghost, which I suppose he had. I'm Daniel Jackson.
Daniel Jackson's dead.
Hunter's weapon lifted as Jack stepped forward. Why don't you start talking? I searched frantically for something to say that would convince them.
I have a message for you, Jack, from Major Hunter. He says, the Blackhawks don't stand a chance this season, and frankly, I agree. They've shown terrible form the last couple of games.
Hunter and Jack exchanged a quick glance. This morning, I carried on, you had waffles for breakfast because the commissary was out of Fruit Loops. Jack relaxed his hold on the gun. Daniel? I tried to muster a smile. It's me, Jack. More or less. And I can explain everything. So, here I am. Back in my office. Only, it's not my office. Or is it? Everything seems the same, and yet... For 8 hours, I walked a different path. And the people who walked by my side are gone now. Wiped out by a quirk of physics. I'm all that's left. The only keeper of their memory. And here... These people lost their Daniel Jackson. They've lost a lot of good people. And I wonder if they'll ever accept me in this place. 8 hours difference. That's all. And yet, right now, it feels like an insurmountable barrier. Well, I guess that's it. The end of my story. I'll never forget my friends or what they gave up, and I will never allow anyone else to forget them either. After all, no one gets left behind.
Dr. Jackson?
Oh, hey, Major Hunter, come on in.
Are you busy, sir? You look like maybe you were busy.
Actually, no, I'm all done. I was just, I didn't want to forget, so I was just making some notes, you know.
Sure. Sure, I know. Listen, sir, This is kind of awkward, but I wanted to give you these.
They're my dog tags. I mean, they're his dog tags.
Who else should have them, sir? They're yours. And he... I guess I think he'd have wanted you to have them. I mean, do you think he would?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he would. I mean, I would. Thanks, Hunter. This means a lot.
No problem, sir. And, welcome home.
Is that where I am?
Sure. Why not? Look, the way I figure, this was... This was just the path you had to walk. If you hadn't, none of us would be here, would we?
Circular path?
Sure. A circular path leading right back where you started from. Listen, Colonel O'Neill said to fetch you. We're going to watch the game. Have a few beers. You should come.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I will. That sounds good.
We missed you, sir. It's good to have you back.
It's good to be back, Major. It's good to be home.
So, Michael, it's fantastic that you've done this for us. Thank you so much. What were your first thoughts when we approached you about the idea of this project?
I thought, what a great idea. Why hasn't anybody else done this before? I had done an audiobook for a separate science fiction mythology called Local Custom a few years ago. And I remember thinking at that time when I was doing it, I went, yeah, we should do like Stargate audiobooks. That'd be kind of fun. At least I would know what the heck I was talking about. And then when you said this, I literally was like going, well, it's happened so many times. It's like, it's a brilliant idea. But then you sort of go, well, there must be a reason why nobody's done it at this point. And then when you did it, I went, well, good. It's about time. When I heard it was you, I went, that's fantastic. Good for her.
Cool. And why do you think the Stargate adventures work in this format? What do you think is it that makes it perfect for audio?
The one is that we're not making any more episodes, so this is a great way to keep having the characters stay alive. I think the characters' voices and everything are very familiar with the audience, and I think that if the writing matches up with it, that using this format, people can use their imaginations and substitute whatnot when they read a book. But this way, it's done for them. It can be, listened to at any particular time as opposed to just read. And I think it gives a little taste back to the audience of instead of just using their imagination, there's a bit more peanut butter on the toast for them to play with. So I definitely think obviously having the actors be there, I think it gives them a little bit more of what they've been looking for.
Mm. Audio is obviously very different to television. What do you think are the advantages of recording audio as an actor? How do you approach it?
Well, I mean, in terms of as a medium, when it's a visual thing, when you're on television, it's always, of course, it's a visual medium, and so the actors have really not a lot of control over that. Where the camera is set up, how it moves around, and how the story is told is through an eye as opposed to an ear. Here, it's got a lot to do with the performers and the performance. You know, the idea of old radio plays when you'd hear the marching up the steps, and you could visualize it that way. There's more. The actors have more say in the creation of the story in this environment, by the use of the voice and the sound and the aesthetic of it. That lends itself to the listener's imagination than in the visual medium, where it's largely up to the director to tell the story that way, and the actors are more like pieces of the puzzle to be moved around.
And the first script we recorded today was Gift of the Gods, which is actually set in season 3, so it's an earlier Daniel. Has he changed for you playing him? Has he changed much between season 3 and...
I think so. Between the story that
that we just did with Shell Game and Gift of the Gods, you could see the writers did a good job of capturing the difference of the character. I could kind of feel it in me, especially the interaction with Val. That's something that was not part of season three, Daniel. He was much more, he was softer and a lot more sincere and almost sentimental. And especially with that team at that particular time and the character interactions then, he was a bit of a softer individual. And I think there has been a slight hardening of the character, I realized just in that short time that we did those two the two scripts.
And can you give me some idea of what your thoughts were of the two scripts and Gift of the Gods we recorded first and then Shell Game we've just recorded? Like you said, they're very different.
It's feels like, for me, obviously with my experience from it, it feels like the difference between seasons 1 through 8 and seasons 9 and 10, that there's a very different kind of dynamic going on there. The first one felt very much like Stargate from when we originally started it, and the last 2 years of the show were obviously something very different, and I think that's as plainly different as those time periods were in the history of the show. How it, for all of us filming the show, seasons 9 and season 10 always felt like the beginning of a different series, and seasons 1 through 8 felt like that was a separate series as well as in these two scripts. I think just completely different interactions, completely different dynamics, and completely different rhythms almost.
And you did some fantastic impressions of your characters there.
Yeah, they'll love that. I think I made Teal'c sound like Spock, though. I think Chris is going to hate my ass for that one.
Maybe he'll get his own back one.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I would love to actually hear him impersonate Daniel. That will be interesting.
And of course, we were talking about the difference between television and audio there. And here we're in, I mean, I'm sitting across from you in a different booth at the moment. It must be a very different process for you as an actor to actually, you know, you're not interacting directly with those people. How does that work?
It's tough. This is a difficult aspect. I mean, the wonderful thing about, you know, even doing a table read of a script and whatnot, it's obviously the characters in the Stargate universe were very important. And I've always found it difficult. I remember when we were doing even the voiceover for the video game that never was created, but it was a script, but we were all doing it separately. And so even though you had a rough idea of how the other character was going to deliver a line, you never really knew for sure. So it's a bit of a tricky thing. Obviously, when John was here reading Hunter, that when we were talking to each other, that's when it really came to life. And it was always the same in the show. I could memorize my lines and learn them, but it was really that other actor that brought that character to life. And we couldn't really work separately, otherwise you wouldn't have that rhythm and that kind of the ease of repartee that the characters have on the show. And so I think that's the trickiest part, is either you know, reacting to nothing is a very difficult thing, or even just being curious as to how the other person would play it. And you might be wrong because they might decide differently, that kind of thing. But so it is a tricky proposition. I think that's the most difficult aspect about it.
And do you think, you mentioned that you did Local Custom, the audiobook. Did that prepare you for this in a way? Is it a similar medium, or is it completely different reading a book?
This is easy for me, obviously, because I know the characters so well. I have a visual in my head when I'm reading the scripts and the rhythms of the characters and the voices of the characters, they're all in there. And I also understand the mythology and the different potentials of the mythology that we've been through or could be going through in these cases. With that, reading a book that I didn't have a basis for understanding the world other than just the book itself, I could visualize the characters, but I didn't understand the world purely because I had nothing to draw from with it. So it was a bit frustrating sometimes because I was creating the thing and I didn't understand it at times. So I was supposed to be creating it for the audience. So then I was really getting frustrated because some of the stuff just made absolutely no sense to me. So I'm sure those people will tell you I swore a lot more during the recording of that than this.
Yes, you've been very polite today.
Yes.
And you've played Daniel for a decade now. That's an awfully long time to play a character. You came here straight from a convention that you were doing in the UK. Do you think this character is going to stay with you for a long time now?
Yeah, I definitely think that, you know, after going on 11 plus years and the talk of already doing more movies in the springtime with this, that there's a deep entrenchment with the character there. So, I think that he'll always be, you know, stuck in some waiting room in my brain, marching back and forth, waiting to be used again. And parts of his that character's personality have become part of mine, and vice versa. So, I think that there's a it wouldn't be to say it, I was asked earlier, but what is it like to say goodbye to the character? It's like, I don't think I'm going to have to say goodbye to it. I think he's always going to be running around my head doing crazy crap all my life.
I'm sure the fans will be very happy too.
Yes, yes, yeah, exactly. He's insane.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Sharon.